Welcome to Evolutionary Men, where we learn to lead in life and love with head, heart, and guts. This is for men wanting to deepen their presence in the world, clarify their purpose, more easily connect with their power, and find ease in dating and relationships. I'm your host, Jason Lang. Let's get started. I'm excited to announce that doors are now open for the men's group experience. This is your chance to join a powerful brotherhood of men ready to grow, lead, and live with purpose. If you're done playing small and ready to rise, this is where it starts. Just head over to mens.group to learn more. All right, and welcome back, everyone. I am super pumped to be joined by Trip Lanier today, who is the host of the New Man Podcast, author of the book, This Book Will Make You Dangerous, and important, my first men's coach ever. I was just digging through my Gmail, Trip, and I found an email from you to me about like our first coaching agreement from 2007.
Wow. So I was
bright-eyed 26-year-old child in a lot of ways. And it was really just hitting me before we got on this call of, you were one of the first men that ever just sat down with me, looked me in the eye and said, like, what's going on with your life? What do you want to do? And really just was hitting me of like, fuck, like I needed that. And so very grateful for the journey I've been on, in a large part because of you, both from the coaching and then Trip facilitated, the first real men's group I was in. He helped us launch it, which I am now back in after 14 years away. These guys are still cranking along, and we have you really as a big part of that to thank.
Yeah. Wow. It's great to kind of revisit that, you know, it's so long ago, and to hear and see how you're now firmly on your own path and impacting so many other people. It gives me I just feel so much, you know, pride and joy, like, hell yeah. Great to see this. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's so great to feel the impact you and your family have had on my family as I worked with your wife, Allison, quite deeply as well, thanks to you, which was transformative for me. I often tell men stories about that time period. The thing I really wanted to kind of orient around today is this book you wrote, This Book Will Make You Dangerous, which I just have to say, it's fucking awesome. it took me a little while to get to it. I had two kids and you had reached out to me and I read it. And not only was I laughing my ass off, I was like, oh man, this is just really deep and profound and hits actually a lot of what I work with men, but from like some pretty fresh angles. So first off, thank you for writing it. I mean, I learned a lot in terms of just some really simple frames to even name some of my experience and the experience I've had with clients and things I've seen with guys. So I want to start talking there. And the first question I know a lot of guys are going to ask is, what does it mean to be dangerous? Right? So that word, what does that mean to you? How does that show up in the work? And what do I imagine a lot of people miss about the importance of that title?
Yeah. So what does it mean to be dangerous? I mean, for this book, it's not about hucking yourself off of cliffs and, you know, wingsuits and playing with guns and fast cars and that kind of stuff. It is about recognizing where we have adapted to a certain way of living, that what is dangerous to us nowadays is anything that threatens our sense of comfort, anything that threatens our sense of security and stability and certainty, and anything that threatens our self-image that might make us look like a moron. And so we can, if we're unaware that these are the new dangers, our lives can become, what do I do to avoid being uncomfortable? What do I do to avoid any kind of risk or uncertainty? And what do I do to make sure that I don't look like a moron?
Yeah, it's such a great distillation. And I think you named it, how did you say it in the book? Protect, please, improve.
We're protecting and pleasing, improving. Yeah.
Such like a simple triad there that as soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, that explains so much about how I've behaved in life and how I see many, many men. And it really struck me. I was talking with another guy just about modern conveniences lately and how life's just getting so easy. You know, I order food and I don't even have to talk to anyone.
Which is great.
In some ways. yeah, right. No, totally. But that in some ways, you know, how I interpreted to be dangerous is like to consciously reintroduce certain friction in our life, right? The good kind of friction that causes us to grow. And so, you know, how do you see this lack of living dangerously, let's say? How has that shown up in, you know, guys you've worked with throughout the years?
Well, I'll just speak personally because I'm 52 now. I like comfort. I like certainty. I like looking good. I've kind of built a nice little pad for myself here. And so if it's so easy for me to be unconscious and just whatever choices come at me through the day and just be like, yeah, let's just do the comfortable thing. Yeah, let's just play it safe here. Yeah, let's just make sure we look good here and just have that become the purpose of my life. And I think this is true for a lot of us, that if we look at the purpose that's underlying all of the choices we make, we kind of are moving in that direction. And so our lives get smaller and smaller. And so I feel this. Even though I wrote a freaking book about it, I can feel this gravitational, this force that wants to pull us into this place. And for me, I feel like it's easy to go just like sleepwalk through life. And I want to take responsibility for that. Like, I have to work at this. I have to work at this and like, yeah, go talk to that person, even though you don't want to, right? Go talk to the person that's bringing your food. Like, get out of this place where it's just so easy to avoid these things. Because when I personally avoid these things, my life feels smaller and I feel more fragile. And I can feel where it's like, I'm just closing myself off from all these opportunities. If I won't do the small things that feel a little dangerous, then I'm certainly not going to lean in and take bigger risks in service of what I really want in life. So I didn't answer your question, but we can come back around to that.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm curious for you. How do you know when, let's say, you're in a dangerous moment in the good way? Like what happens for you, or what do you feel in your nervous system or body to kind of give guys a frame or an anchor?
I think I've learned the voice, these protector voices, if we were to use some kind of IFS language, like there's just protectors like, oh, we don't have to do that. Like there's this kind of procrastination flavor to it. There's a dismissive, yeah, like, well, that's not a thing. Or it feels young to me. It feels like the part of me that just wants to sit on the couch and watch TV all the time and let life go by. So for me, there's a certain flavor. And I know if I listen to that, I can hear it and be like, oh, okay. And then it doesn't mean that I do everything that is challenging or everything that comes. Like, that's certainly not it. But I do want to be aware of it. I want to be aware more and more of when I'm choosing to be contracting in my life or have the opportunity to expand a bit more.
Okay, awesome. And one of the cool things you share a lot about in your story, which I got to also just preface here, I switch between reading it and listening to it. And it's funny as shit to listen to it. your full humor comes through your voice. So I highly recommend that. But you share a lot of your personal story of, in some sense, finding a certain type of success pretty early in life with an early career and business you formed. But then, you know, I would say 20 to 30 years sooner than some men, found some things that weren't working with that in a sense, or hit the limitations of that. And I'm curious, what did you discover in your path there about this kind of like what it really means to live on purpose or be successful that I know you've experienced? And I'm imagining you've worked with quite a few guys on as well.
Yeah, I can think of two experiences that happened within, they were in conjunction with one another, and that I went through a really difficult time in my 20s, where I was grieving an event that happened in my teens. And there was a point in that really heavy place that I realized there was no amount of money that could get me out of that. That the peace and grounding that I was seeking, like this, just like, please help me come back. Like, please help me come back to my life. And I want to feel, quote, normal. There was no amount of money that would help me. And I thought that was really interesting, considering that so much of life is about money. Money is our God in so many ways. And I'm not saying money is bad, but there is an aspect of that. It's like, well, money will solve the problems that I have. And so that was a valuable lesson to realize that it wasn't going to solve that problem. And then from there, I after that experience, it was like, yeah, what the heck am I really doing? And I was fortunate enough to build a small business and do well for myself and realize, okay, this is essentially it. Like, I could coast from here on out and just keep doing the same thing for the next 30 years. And it was scary to me. That much certainty, that much predictability felt very uncomfortable. Now, I was still a very young man, but at the same time, it was just like, this isn't what I really feel like I'm here to do. And so I recognized what was holding me back was, well, here's your comfort. Here's your certainty. People will think you're the biggest moron on the planet if you were to sell this thing and move on. And like, what an idiot you are. There wasn't a lot of encouragement of like, yeah, man, you got to this place. What's the next phase? What's the next chapter? It was like, no, you get here and you hold on, you anchor in. Mm-hmm. And so I was up against those things without really knowing it at the time. But it just internally, I was like, this isn't what I'm called to do. This isn't really what this is about for me.
Yeah. And I mean, you work with some pretty kick-ass men just from, you know, people I've heard you interview and talking about some of the clients you work with, you know, high-powered CEOs, Navy SEALs, performance athletes. You know, what's going on in a man's life by the time he gets to you? Like, what kind of pain is he in, or what's he coming up against in some of these men you're guiding at this point?
I would say a big part of it is there's been this massive investment in themselves and achieving and accomplishing and getting to a certain status in life. So that can be financial, or it can be, I've reached this stage and I have these titles and this notoriety and, you know, look at me. And there's a big disparity between what they thought it was going to be like and what it is like. They got to this place and it didn't solve all the problems that they were trying to solve. Early on in their life, they thought, if I just did X, if I just got to Y, if I just became this other person, I'll be set for life. It'll smooth sailing from there. And they get to this place and they're like, wait a second, I must have screwed up. Or they've gotten to this place before and the goalposts move and they keep striving for more and more because it doesn't feel right. And they're like, I can't keep doing this. And that's a big part of it too, is they're like burning out, trying to play the game they played in their 20s, even though it doesn't work for them anymore. And so they're not recognizing that there's a developmental shift. We're growing as men. We're maturing. And so what got us off in our 20s and early 30s and on, it doesn't work for us as we get older. Our values change, our identity changes. And so it's up to us to pay attention to that information and recognize, wait a second, this doesn't mean things are wrong, but it is an opportunity to grow. It is an opportunity to make a shift. And again, if we're scared, if we don't want to give anything up, if we think like, if I make a move, it's all going to blow up, that can be really terrifying and they'll feel stuck.
Yeah. And you have this great part of the book that I feel like speaks to that, maybe that discovery some guys have of going underneath the surface of really kind of dissecting the difference between, I think you call it an outcome and an experience of, you know, we're men, we do men's work, we like goals, I got to hit the outcome, the number, once I X, then I'll feel Y. Explain a little bit about what that difference is of an outcome and an experience. And I think how a lot of us get on the escalator thinking one thing, but we're actually getting stuck on the other.
So as a coach, it's natural that goals are a part of the work, right? And I realized that I was working with people and they're like, yeah, this, I'm hiring a coach because I want to go from A to B. Like there's this place. And if I get here, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And I never really bought into that just from my own experience. And so I started asking, it's like, well, what do you think is going to be different about your life when you get there? Oh, well, I'll have flexibility. I'll have freedom. I'll be able to do, nobody will tell me what to do. Okay. And I started to really pay attention to what they were really hoping would be different. And so if they were to have this outcome where they bought the house in this zip code, or they got this money, or they married this type of woman and had a family, like whatever it is, like was this objective, measurable thing. Okay, this is what I'm going for. That they had a theory. It was a theory that they would feel something different. They would experience something different. Accumulating that or achieving that would mean that they would feel different than they do right now. And so this was a strategy. If I change this, if I acquire this, if I become this, if I accomplish this, I'll feel different. Okay, well, let's talk about what you really want to feel then. And what I found was that a lot of guys were achieving and acquiring and moving up the ladder, and some of them felt trapped. A lot of them felt drained. A lot of them were in marriages or isolated from people or isolated from their friends. They felt alone, especially guys that are in leadership positions. Basically, everybody was, they could hire and fire, and it was like they were afraid of them. And a lot of them were either bored because they were coasting, like I would have done if I stayed in that previous job, or they were overwhelmed because they're just constantly in this more, more, more phase. And I said, well, if we don't want to be trapped, that tells me we want to be free. If we don't want to be drained, that tells me we want to be alive. If we don't want to be isolated, it tells me we want deep connection and love. And if we don't want to be bored or overwhelmed, then we want peace of mind. And that started to click with me. And I never met anybody that was like, yeah, I want to be trapped or drained or isolated or bored or overwhelmed. But when I talk about freedom, aliveness, love, and peace, there's a head nodding. It's like, yeah, especially aliveness. That has a lot of juice for men. And so it's like, well, what if we started to allow more of that today, not just when you accomplish this outcome? And then we can move towards the outcomes we want. But a lot of times, if we start to look at where we can experience greater freedom, aliveness, love, and peace today, oh, there are opportunities here. I've just fixated on this ideal future instead of where I am right now.
Yeah, it's so great because that you point to kind of one of the myths I think a lot of men, myself included, have fallen for is, oh, once I X, then I'll get to feel or experience Y. And the thing that's continued to shock me is I've both hit my own milestones and worked with men is, oh, wait, I hit the goal and I'm still not feeling that. No, you know, oh, now it's got to be that paycheck or that thing. So maybe it's not about that outcome. So that was such a potent thing when I was reading that. And one of the ways I work with a lot of men is still around like dating and relationships. And that's one of the first things we often work around guys with, because there's often the checklist in our head of, oh, I want a person who's like this, this, or this. And then a lot of guys I work with end up getting around that woman. And turns out they feel like shit in their bodies. They're anxious or they're nervous. Or they don't feel comfortable with her. And so by shifting it to like, how do you want to feel with someone? It's like such a different experience to, oh yeah, that person hits all my check boxes, but I actually don't feel relaxed, alive, connected in any of those states. And it's great. You have the poster of those four things right behind you there. So people on video can see those in it, because I want to dig into them more. And the first one I want to start with is peace. Because I think that you kind of hit such an interesting definition of it. Because oftentimes, right, when I'm working with men and they think of peace, they just think of, well, no conflict, right? Playing it safe, or comfort. How do you differentiate the peace you're speaking about from, the opposite of dangerous, like we were talking about in the beginning, because they're very different in how you kind of lay it out. But I want to hear your words even more than mine.
Yeah, the irony is that freedom, aliveness, love, and peace are going to challenge us to go into the places that are uncomfortable and risky. And, you know, we might look like a moron. And so when it comes to peace, I like to think of it like, let's say we've got a toothache. I can guzzle Jack Daniels and take painkillers, but that gives me comfort. That gives me a temporary comfort. And so if I'm in a relationship and we're not dealing with what's going on, there are little things that we do to buy time and have comfort. Like we just kind of brush stuff under the rug. We avoid conversations. We just kind of stuff things inside, and we might have a temporary sense of comfort or kind of like keeping things safe up on the top, but we're not dealing with anything. And what that has is erodes our peace of mind. It kills us inside. Peace, though, if we come back to the tooth, it's pulling that damn thing. It's dealing with it. It's going into it instead of avoiding it. And that might be painful. There might be discomfort, like real discomfort in the moment, but it's getting dealt with. And I've noticed that in my own life and when I work with other people is that when we identify what needs to be dealt with and we choose to turn into it, even though there's still a fear and anxiety, there's also underneath that a deep sense of peace of like, finally, I'm dealing with this. I'm not running from it anymore. It's a strange sensation. I don't know if you've ever had this, but there's just like, I'm no longer running from this. Even though I'm going to do this very difficult thing, it feels right. This feels like the right thing to do, even though it's very difficult. And that to me is the difference between this kind of short-term comfort versus peace.
Yeah, I see that so much. It's played out in my own life. And I just really loved the definition there because it kind of shook up, you know, peace and how a lot of guys I work with think about it, that, yeah, it's not necessarily comfortable, but it's like it's a deeper type of relaxation, right? You know, one manifestation of this I feel like is in my marriage. We've now gone through some really challenging things with each other, that what's actually more relaxing now is not that we're going to not hit more challenging things. It's that I trust we have a process to work through that conflict. So that's what I trust. Not that it's going to be easy or I'm not going to like shit the bed sometimes or be scared or whatever. It's, oh, there's a deeper peace in our duo of we can navigate this stuff as uncomfortable as it still often is.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot. I do a lot of shadow work with guys these days, emotionally, same thing. There's the, you know, whether it's some grief or anger or deep fear about something that has been held on to, every second of every day, some part of our resource is going to kind of locking that down. Mm. And on the other side, there's like that deeper, whatever energy was being used to hold that is now released and it's free to me to put towards the things I want to put them towards again.
Yeah, it's not about building a better castle. Right? There's an armoring that we can have. If I get enough money and I can get totally enough things that I can armor myself with, and I can protect myself from every possible angle and every possible attack. Well, that's a defensive way to move through life. And we do need boundaries. We do need to have defenses. I'm not neglecting that, but I think that if that's the strategy, we're bringing into our marriage or our careers, we're going to be in a constant state of anxiety. And the reason why is because we're uncertain about where the next attack's coming from. And we don't really feel that we can do something about it. When you described what you were describing with your wife, what I heard was, we don't know what's going to happen. At some point, something's going to happen, but you know what? We can handle it. We'll figure it out. We've learned the skills. We've learned how to work with each other. And there's the peace of mind. There's someone I worked with that was worth a lot of money. He decided to retire, and one of his investments went tits up, and he's freaking out, even though he has plenty of money. But the thing he fears is he's like, I can't go make more. This is the belief. So he lives in this state of scarcity because the lifestyle he's chosen, he can't really afford it this time. And I'm like, or you could go make more, right? Like wouldn't that feel powerful instead of, oh God, I'm going to lose. Even though he's got plenty, the fear is lost, but he doesn't realize that he can go make more. He has options there. And that's what kills our peace of mind.
Yeah, I love that. And it makes me realize the kind of what it means to play full out is another way to think of, I think, what you're talking about with dangerous, in that certainly in my experience, and then, you know, particularly around women and stuff, for a lot of guys I coach, the freedom of I took my shot is very different from the freedom of, oh, I was too scared to go for it and I'll never know. It's not that it's not uncomfortable and it doesn't sting, but there's a certain peace when it comes to, well, I can fall asleep tonight because I know I kind of did my part in the world. And that's part of what I hear you speaking towards in this piece, that it's another way to maybe put it is, it's at least for me, it's been a shit more empowering. So it's just like, oh, I have control. I have agency in my life, right? There's a certain peace that comes from, you know, taking responsibility for that not, you know, we don't always want to do in all aspects of our life.
Not easy, right? Not easy.
And so, I just want to, we're going to go through these, love. So love and connection. Yeah. You know, I do men's work, and not the first word that often comes up for successful, high achieving men. Dig into love a little bit more here and how you've experienced it and seen, you know, maybe underneath what a lot of guys think they want, what made this one show up.
Love's the thing, man. So that's why it's a different color, right? It's where everything arises from, right? So we could go on the esoteric here for a while, but what I've found it's just underneath it all, when a guy is, and we've been there, we've both been there, like you crumbled on the ground and then you got like what's left is love, right? It's like that's what we look for in that dark moment where money wasn't going to solve my problem. It was love. It was love that I was seeking, that connection that I was seeking. Like everything starts from that place. And so I think a lot of us are confusing attention and validation with love. Mm-hmm. I like to get attention. I like to get validation, but we can look at it through the lens of junk food versus what's really nourishing for us. And I think a lot of us don't realize that we can develop skills to navigate relationships in a way where we can have genuine connection and genuine interactions with folks and really experience that love. A lot of us are kind of in that castle mode. We don't really talk about what we're truly thinking and feeling and wanting. And so we're always at an arm's distance from those that are around us. And so I think that whether it's connections with others, but also just deep connection within ourselves, deep connection to what we can't see, those are all really beautiful, nourishing places that we often cut ourselves off from because we're so fixated on the future.
Yeah, that's definitely when I see it with a lot of guys I work with, is just malnourished, like just on output for so, holding their family, holding their job, holding their whatever. And, you know, some men literally have no training as to how to even receive love. And it's like, oh, hey, there's actually people around you trying to love you. Do you know how to say yes or let that in? And they're like, no. And, you know, that's been an edge for me too, to just, okay, let it in. So I think that's such a really potent one that I think a lot of guys just miss.
I think I've seen it over and over again that these, especially at the more like the achiever types, there's this kind of thing they can get really ramped up about this ideal future. And then when they actually start to genuinely receive love in their lives, they're like, why did I want all that shit? Like, it's okay if you want to go create stuff. It's not the problem. But what they were doing was, it was that theory. That's where I'm going to feel loved. That's where I'm going to feel enough. And it doesn't usually add up that way. But if they can allow love into their lives, they might start to realize like, I didn't really want that shit to begin with. I just really wanted to have this experience.
Yeah. Amazing. And I want to save aliveness for last. So I'm going to go to freedom next.
Tell
us about freedom. I mean, is that just, I just get to do whatever the fuck I want, whenever I want, you know, date whoever, sleep with whoever. Like, well, yes, yeah,
no morals.
What's freedom mean?
No morals. No. No, it's not hedonism. And it's not, I think a lot of people just think of this first level of freedom as flexibility. Oh, I want to work from home 2 days a week, right? Like, or I want to be able to kind of dictate how I do X, Y, and Z with work or something like that. And that's a level of it. But I think on a much deeper level, we're wanting permission to be who we truly are. There's a role we've learned to play to be safe, to be accepted, and to succeed in life. And a lot of us may not even realize we're playing that role. It just became second nature. But there's a tension. The further out of alignment that role is with who we are at our essence, there's a friction. There's a grind that's happening inside. And we can misinterpret that to believe I must not have enough. I must not be enough. I must not be doing it enough. And so freedom to me speaks to this permission we give ourselves to, like, no, you get to be all of who you are, not just the good parts, not just the parts you like to present to the world, but also, like, yeah, these other aspects of you that might be a little weird for other people. They're part of you too. You get to embrace them. You get to accept them as well. And you get to bring them into this world. And I think freedom, how I'm referring to it in this book, is starting from that place. Is that permission that we give ourselves. And it's not hedonism. It's not the let me go do anything that I feel at any given moment, because I think ultimately that doesn't provide us peace of mind. I've been able to have some pretty hedonistic times in my life. I was in a rock band for years. I have a sense of that. But I never felt like that was truly satisfying. I never felt like that was where I felt at peace. I normally felt like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe I did that. So that wasn't peace of mind, right? Binging and piling on that stuff doesn't really give us what we're looking for. But through maturity, I think we start to find, like, oh, this is what's nourishing. This is where I really feel more expansive and more whole and more me.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that ties into someone else sharing is what's become a good compass for me in terms of even what relationships do I want to invest in? You know, when I'm with that person, do I feel more free to be myself, or, you know, am I in the more prove or whatever kind of side of, I have to put up some kind of artifice? And, the exhalation, at least I witness in a lot of men when they get into that space, is just so great of, like, oh fuck, all that stuff, all those calculations. I think so many of us men are constantly making, when that gets to just release, so incredible to witness and feel.
I'm sure you've seen this many times in men's groups, but it's just like, there's one guy that brings up X that's happening in his life, and you can almost see other guys just like, I'm not the only one. And there's this exhale. It's like, you did the work for me today. Right?
Totally.
You, and it's just this, like, I'm free from this prison that I've kept myself in, that I'm the only one and I have to hide this. And out of 8 billion people on the planet, no one will understand. It's just like, what a terrible place to encase ourselves in.
Yeah. It's one of the great things in groups is seeing that the collective unburdening of, we don't have to. so great.
Yeah. Listen to that language. We have to, right? That's a construct, right? It's bringing us in. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. And then, I really wanted to end this quad here with aliveness. A, because it's just personally, one of the things I've always enjoyed about connecting with you is there's just a sense of aliveness that I've always felt in your presence and how you engage with your life. And I would say my word I kind of put with that is playfulness. And I would love to see, just kind of talk me through, aliveness and how it shows up in your life and how it does or doesn't show up in many of the men you work with.
I think aliveness is shifted for me as I've gotten older. I think it's always been the same thing. I think just the flavor might have changed. It's not the adrenaline, jacked up, fists in the air, wind. That's great. Like, I can certainly appreciate that. I go surf and catch a wonderful wave, and it's just an exhilarating feeling. And that is certainly alive. That is certainly a sense of aliveness there. But what I'm speaking to in the book is more of this deep sense of being fully here. Not in the future, not in the past, but really here. I feel this. I feel alive. And I have had moments in my life where I was doing something and there was this calm, grounded centerness, but there was almost like this thing in my head. I was like, this is why you're alive. Like there was an affirmation of that. And it wasn't in that, there was no fist pumping and no arms in the air and, you know, yelping or anything like that. It was a different thing. And almost it was very kind of deep. And it was as if something was expressing itself through me and as me rather than something that I grasped and achieved. So I don't want to shit on the first type of aliveness because that's really fun and it makes life really, really exuberant. But that deeper aliveness of just being fully here and that's a different flavor. And in terms of playfulness, I think when we talk about how these all relate together, for me, when we start to take our seat in freedom, aliveness, love, and peace, I think life can become more play because we're no longer in such a defensive posture. We're no longer guarding against discomfort and instability and uncertainty and, oh God, what might people think? There's just a natural confidence and groundedness. And so for me, my temperament, my type, my essence, that shows up as like, well, then this is now we're playing, right?
Yeah.
And instead of like, oh gosh, what's my wife going to think of me if I try this in the bedroom? It's like, let's fucking give it a shot, right? Or what about this? If I say this on a podcast, like I could be defensive or it's like, fuck it, let's see, right? There's an energy that comes through and exudes through us. And to me, it feels like play now.
Yeah, I love it so much. As I've often joked with my wife of creating a t-shirt that just says grumpy, tired, and burdened, like the masculine disposition. And I love that you highlighted this one because, yeah, play and aliveness and that presence, right, is such an antidote to that, that even it's one of the things I've grown to appreciate over the years, you know, again, partly seated because of experiences you co-created for me of, you know, we could be doing like really fucking deep work and it could be funny as shit, like in the same moment, right? Like huge grief release. And then there's the best joke in your life, like right there. And that lightheartedness is such good medicine. And it, one of the other reasons I really loved that you highlighted this one is something I've very hard, been practicing very hard to live more in my life of, remember I read this book from this teacher. Actually, I saw it, this Buddhist Geeks things from a friend of ours, Rick Hansen, who did Hardwiring Happiness. And he just talked about like the neuroscience, right, of negativity bias. And it's like bad moment gets in right away. And he was like, yeah, the research is basically like, if you're having a good moment, you have to sit there for like a minute and say, this is a great moment. I'm enjoying my life right now. Like, and you have to hold it to really let it sink in. And when I saw that aliveness as like a really a manifestation of just being deeply present, it really struck a chord to me because, you know, you're a father, I'm a father, and I'm in the earlier phase. And it's just like, you know, every month it's a different kid looking back. And it's like, oh, you know, a lot of the day I'm so busy, I got to do this shit. Got to work really hard so I can make a lot of money so I can be present with my kid eventually. And then I'm there instead of actually being present with the child that, you know, is growing up in front of me. And so that practice of aliveness of just, oh, can I fully give myself over to this moment and just really enjoy it for what it is such a big one. And it's what I would say brings a lot of men to some of the groups I run. They're just like, wrung dry. There's just nothing left. And to see men come back alive is literally probably the most rewarding thing I do in work, whether it's through play or emotional release or just that exhale of unburdening in one that I just feel like so many men are malnourished on that I work with.
I wonder if you'll agree with this because the examples I gave and even the examples you gave of like kind of being in this place of malnourished, there's a withholding. There's a, you know, this kind of holding back and just like everything's got to kind of be held within. And yeah, that's the grumpy. What did you say? Grumpy, tired. What?
and burdened. The essential masculine disposition.
Hey, I've got a wife, I got a kid, I got a puppy that bites me in the dick when I come downstairs. So it's like, I get it. All right. I've got my version too. So, but there's something about aliveness in that the doorway to aliveness is, where is there a little death? So if I'm avoiding these places, there's a little thing like, if I step my toe over this line, there's something at risk here. Little bit, not big risk, but little risks. And that's where it starts to be fun. It starts to be fun when we start to take little risks. And so whether I'm in a men's group and it's like, hey, you know, I like ABC and hot butter in my ass crack. And like, who, anybody else? And you know, somebody else, like, it starts to get fun if we're willing to play with those boundaries a little bit of like, oh, I gotta stay within here and I'm stuck in here. If we're looking for aliveness, start to look for little chances and little risks that you can take throughout your day. Little ones. So socially, ask someone a question that you wouldn't ask in at the grocery store, or give somebody a compliment, or hold a lady for an old lady getting into her car, like hold the door. Just find these little things where you're like, that'd be fucking weird. People think you're weird if you do that. Well, do it. And you're probably like, look, just energy just comes alive in us. And it's like, yeah, there you go. It's effusive. And so if we understand that we're avoiding those places all the time, those are the doorways. Like places that are narrow are often, okay, there's aliveness on the other side.
Oh, I love that. Look for the places that are narrow, because those are your doorways. That's such a beautiful fucking image. Just feeling the contours of that in my own life even. How cool. And so, you know, I'm curious, one other part I wanted to ask you about, because I mean, you do work with a lot of high achievers, and how have you found, or what do you see, like, because, you know, there's this emerging thing that literally the name of your show is the new man, right? Trying to go beyond a lot of the old definitions. Where does emotion come into play for, like, you know, a integrated, modern, dangerous man?
I mean, it is huge. I think it's a yin to the yang of this objective reasoning, rational stuff. And I think that emotion gets a bad rap. We learn early on that we can't trust emotions and we can't trust our emotional world. Why? We're young. It's a lot to handle. It's a lot to be with. And then also it's like, shit, if I get emotional, if I get sad or I cry or something, then I'm going to be chastised for it. So it's easy for us as men to shut down our emotional world. But we don't recognize that our emotions are really powerful guidance system. Like we can learn to listen and recognize that this is where things go. This is where I feel more lit up. This is where I feel more contracted. You were talking about the relationship stuff earlier. I identify more as a creative. I came up, I went to art school. I was a musician. So when I'm working with achievers, that they're very much future oriented. Like, you put a plan together, you put it on the wall. It's a chart, all this stuff. It seems to be, it's a void of any kind of interiors. And that's okay if that works for them. I recognize everybody's got a different temperament. But when it asks, like, for a creative person, there's a reason why that chord goes there. There's a reason why that scene goes in the movie. There's a reason why we use this lens versus that lens. It's because there's just a felt sense that that's what's needed there. And that comes from inside. And if we lose touch with that, we'll kind of wonder why we've got plenty of shit, but none of it feels right. Like, there's this kind of emptiness, or it feels off track. But if we can embrace that we have a part of us that likes to use maps and vision and all that kind of stuff, but then ultimately come back to, we have some feedback that's letting us know, I'm not quite, you know, this doesn't feel quite right, or this is getting more and more draining. We can learn to access that too. So I like to have both of those and not play one or the other.
Yeah. It's striking me, for whatever reason, for the first time, maybe, that, you know, sometimes guys have a little resistance to the emotional stuff, in my experience of, why do I need to do that? You know, be stoic, like, just hit the goal and go. But I mean, really, instinct is just emotional content, right? If we're not in touch with our emotions, we're not going to be really connecting to instinct. It's maybe just a more masculine way of saying it. It's like all that stuff that's happening in your body that helps guide you. So that, yeah, it's appreciating that takeaway just from what you said.
Well, it's also like, I like certain emotions. I don't like others. So there's this kind of preference, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about you. Mine's more of a pipe. Like they're all in there.
Yep.
And I spent many years of my life trying to, you know, repress certain emotions, grief, you know, sadness or whatever. And it was cutting me off from a lot of other things. Everything became, my life was essentially this really narrow band of experiences. And so if we can learn through experience that we can handle emotions, that they can move through us as electricity moves through a circuit. Oh, well, it comes and it goes. And I don't necessarily enjoy feeling sadness or anything like that, but it's part of that peace that we were talking about earlier. It's like, all right, I don't want to fucking do this, but I can do this. Like I can have this experience. Well, then we also just feel more expansive. We're allowed to be with all of who we are. And I think that's what we were talking about, this is what we're really wanting when we talk about freedom and aliveness.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny that pipe metaphor, you were the one that gave it to me. I remember now, like, and how formative that really was for me in particular, and how, you know, back in that day, gross simplification, but kind of my range was good, bad, and fine.
Like, right.
And,
yeah.
And like a lot of men, how are you? I'm fine. I'm good, bad.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't leave much room for feeling freedom, aliveness, love, or peace when that's the range, and the willingness to open up to some of my deeper grief and hurts and fears has totally allowed that other side to greatly expand. And yeah, it's so fun connecting the dots, even on that, back to you.
Yeah. And I want aliveness. Well, how would you know? It could come out of the toilet and bite you in the ass, and you wouldn't know if you've shut down that part of your life. If you've put duct tape over all the gauges on your dashboard, you numbed yourself to this part of your world. How would you know? How would you know it was right here, right now?
Oh, so true. And as we start to wind down here, I'm gonna be mindful of time. The other part, something else I wanted to ask you about was, your experience, both in your own life, as much as you like to speak to it, and in men you work with, of the power of a collective in a group, that, you know, there's a lot we can do one-on-one and alone, and there's also something else. And again, you know, one of the first places I really got to know you was not only in one-on-one coaching you were doing with me, but you led really the first men's group I was in, and have been deeply involved in the scene for, you know, far longer than I. So I'm just curious, what do you see, like, in terms of what's possible or useful, or what do some guys not get about the power of growing together or relating or connecting or whatever that, however you might want to phrase that?
Yeah. Well, first I have to say, I miss it. You know, I have moved around, and where I live now, I've not been in a men's group for years.
Yeah.
And so I'm still connected to a lot of the people that served in that function, but the power of being in the group, I haven't experienced in many years. So when you talk about it and you're back with those guys, there's a part of me, it's like, fuck, man, that's really, I'm just envy. Like, it's like really, really happy that you have that. And also like, wow, I can feel that I'm missing that, because I know that I'm at my best when I'm in that environment as well. And so, I think here's one thing that I've noticed. I've been talking to more and more younger guys, younger meaning anybody younger than 52, right? So, but there's a generation that's coming up. They're more apt to do medicine journeys, and they're more apt to talk about their feelings with ChatGPT.
Yes.
But there's this chasm of relationship that they're not grasping, and they don't have any idea of what's really possible there. So they'll go be in a room with a lot of others in a medicine journey, but there's no interaction. There's no sharing. There's no challenge. There's no support in that regard. It's like, we went through a thing, but we're all kind of on our own. There's this individualization that I see happening a lot. I got into this because of the power of being with other men. The first kind of real men's thing I did was going down to Costa Rica, and we were told not to use our names or talk about our lives back at home. Well, then what the hell do you talk about? And that forced us to learn how to communicate and be with each other as we were in the moment, and be like, reflect how we were experiencing each other at the moment. You can tell somebody about that, but until you experience it and you cut away all of the social stuff and really start to be with other men in that way, you just have no clue of how deeply nutritious that is, because there's a nourishment we can only get by being with other men in that context. Not being together, watching the game, not doing that, not that kind of stuff. There's something that we only get in that the context of something like a men's group. And so even guys I know that go to churches and do men's groups there, there's still a very safe way that they're approaching it, because everybody knows each other's wives and there's a lot still on lockdown. The places where we feel like we allow ourselves to really be seen and be challenged by other men are the places we get something that we're seeking elsewhere, but we're not going to be able to find it elsewhere.
Oh, beautiful.
Would you agree with that? That's my take.
100%. Totally. We had a wide open field for where to move in the States in a lot of ways. And the fact that I had a group to return to was the single biggest check mark.
Oh, yeah.
And what brought me back here, because I was like, that's not a small asset to be able to plug into and have like instant community and depth and things that can be hard, you know, to rebuild, particularly as we're older and busy and kids and life. And but that's been one of the most life-changing things for sure for me, is being in a group that can reflect to me what they're seeing week to week, you know, every other week even, and then hold me, quite frankly, hold me when I've had the shit knocked out of me in life. And yeah, you've been working with guys, you know, for a while now, and I'm just curious, as we wrap here, you know, what, if anything, has given you hope for men these days? Like anything you're seeing or noticing or that feels emergent in these last two decades?
Yeah. Well, when, our mutual friend Casey and I started the New Man podcast many, many, many moons ago, 2007, I think 2008, I remember in the back of my mind, like, what's the mission? The mission was, let's get to a place where this isn't weird to talk about. Because at the time it was so stigmatized. There were not other podcasts. YouTube was not a thing. It was like personal growth, personal development, spiritual development was all feminine. It was Oprah's domain. Yeah. And so there was this quote weirdness. It was dangerous. We'll go back to that. It was dangerous to allow people to know that you were interested in this stuff. Like somehow you were admitting that something was wrong with you. And so it's flourishing. The fact that men are now more open about this, and that you kind of have too many options to go through. And of course there's healthier and less healthier versions of this, but the fact that there's more discussion about what's happening in our lives other than what do you do for work and what scotch do you like to drink? I'm really happy about. I didn't think this would happen for another 10, 15, 20 years. Like I thought it would take a couple of generations. And so I'm really hopeful. And we both have studied evolution in various different ways. And it's just like, yep, you get to this level. And of course there's the not so great things and there's the better things, but here we are. It's establishing itself and it's become quote normal that guys can talk about this stuff. And I think it's freaking awesome.
Oh, so great. And deep thank you and bow for trailblazing and really leading the way, both for me personally and for this whole space that is absolutely emerging right now. It's so cool. And what's the best way for guys to keep up with you and what you're up to? And
yeah, well, obviously this book, Will Make You Dangerous, is great. If you're interested in anything we talked about today, you can get that on Amazon or Audible there if you want to listen to it. And the New Man podcast is still going. You get that wherever you get your podcasts. And then if you want to learn more about the coaching work that I do, just go to triplanier.com.
Oh, well, thank you so much, man. Such appreciation for your time today. So fun to be here with you.
Great to reconnect. Yeah.
Yeah. Till next time, guys.
I'm excited to announce that doors are now open for the men's group experience. This is your chance to join a powerful brotherhood of men ready to grow, lead, and live with purpose. If you're done playing small and ready to rise, this is where it starts. Just head over to mens.group to learn more. If you're interested in working with me around dating, relationships, or your masculine presence in the world, just go to evolutionary.men/apply.